It is the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Wednesday morning. I'm Sam Speck, live from our historic studios, as we are joined back by Jacob Weber and James Coover, a couple of extension agents with the K-State Extension offices, as we, we knocked out quite a few courses that we reviewed a little bit coming up for the month of February, as well as coming up this weekend and March. Again, all that information available on the extension websites, and we've done a couple of features on those courses as well. You can find those on our website. For now, though, we can shift our focus over to, hopefully I'm pronouncing this correctly here, James, some dicamba regulations and things like that. I know you've got a lot of information there for some of our listeners out there that that this may portray to. So, James, however you want to get started with it.
And so dicamba, really the issues with it started a few years ago. We've had dicamba in the market for a long time. So dicamba is just like a chemical name. It's a trade name.
Okay.
But really, you know, a few years ago, Monsanto, Syngenta, DuPont, they came out with their own formulations with dicamba-resistant soybeans. A lot of producers already know the story. But really, and so there was a lot of issues with it. Millions of acres of non-resistant soybeans got damaged, along with cotton, gardens. It's a big issue in the Midwest. And so really, so now farmers basically, they have to do a training every year. Last year, they weren't sure if they were going to have this training every year, this special use herbicide or license that you have to get to use dicamba on these soybean-resistant, dicamba-resistant crops. Basically, Xtendimax, Flexapan, and Syngenta. If you're going to use one of those three herbicides on your soybeans, you need to take and get this license. Some of the other things that are different from last year, for instance, last year you could actually use somebody else's license as long as they were supervising you. You could still use the stuff. This year, that's not right. This year, if you're going to spray it, you have to be the one that has the license. And so some other rules is that there'll probably be recertification will have to happen every single year. And so last year they weren't quite sure if it was going to be longer than a year time period, but then the EPA decided, nope, every single year you'll have to get re-registered. Some other very particular rules on this stuff, like you can only spray dicamba 1 hour after sunrise and 2 hours before sunset. So before you could spray it pretty much anytime the after sunrise and before sunset, and now it's a very specific time period that you can use this stuff. Post-emergent dicamba can only be sprayed prior to 45 days after planting, or the R1 stage, and so now there's also a time period that you can only use dicamba. And of course you have to monitor when you planted stuff and keep that all down in your records as well. Now, it used to be you could, everything that you do before you spray a field, everything has to be logged. Wind speed, temperature, all that stuff, so that way it can be called later on. Before it was 2 weeks until you needed to submit that stuff, and now it's 3 days. And so everything, basically they've ratcheted down a lot of the regulations from last year.
I mean, from year to year, what is it, the EPA that's coming down hard on it? I mean, what is it with the just kind of the cracking of the whip here, it sounds like?
Yeah, so really it's part the EPA, but mostly it's the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And so really they're the ones, the regulators of all of this. And so, you know, KDA, the Kansas Department of Agriculture, they have to listen to them and they make their regulations based upon, you know, what the USDA tells them to do.
Yeah, was there, you know, findings or evidence of misuse of dicamba in past? Or what is the
yes,
whole lead of all, I mean, even wind speed that you have to get down, which makes sense when it comes to it if it's a certain chemical. But, I mean, from year to year, it sounds like a couple of years ago it was very lax. And now it's, I mean, did they discover something about it? Or
it's not so much the discovery about it, although there is a lot of question about how volatile it is. Basically, university research says that this stuff is more volatile than the industry, but that's neither here nor there. So originally, a lot of this issue was happening because there was a lot of off-the-label spraying happening mostly around the Arkansas area, honestly, not so much here in Kansas, but there were a lot of issues, and there was a massive quantity of damage pretty much the entire state over, you know, the Arkansas area had some major damage, you know, and we saw a lot of damage here. I mean, it was hundreds of thousands of acres.
Jeez.
And so it's, but you know, that damage, how much yield loss did we get from it? That's a really hard thing to determine. And so, you know, every year that we have a lot of complaints with the KDA or, you know, Oklahoma, Missouri, wherever, those regulations are going to get ratcheted down just a little bit more. So,
yeah, fine. I mean, I'm sure the heavy enough yields that you lose with that, people will start to, and like we said, crack the whip and get those regulations down. And again, when it comes to things like this, I'm sure a lot of times it does get lost in translation because it isn't logged or isn't put down on pen and paper or whichever. So it makes sense. It definitely makes sense. But wow, what a transition within, it sounds like just 5 years that it has changed.
Yeah.
So, with that, a lot of great information about dicamba and the regulations. It looks like you pretty much hit quite a bit of it there, but is there any other big points that our listeners should know about it?
Yeah.
For the year use?
To use this stuff, you have to do the training. K-State Extension, we're probably not going to do trainings ourselves anymore, but BASF, Monsanto, DuPont, they're allowed to give these trainings. And so it doesn't matter what company you take the training from. It covers all the other companies. It's just a training given by the company. It's not company specific. So if you are going to be a private applicator or a commercial spraying dicamba on one of those three crop or with one of those three chemicals, you need to do a training. We're probably going to have some trainings here. And one will be in Independence at 8 o'clock on March the 7th. And one will be in Parsons at 1 o'clock at the Southeast Richardson Extension Center on March the 7th. So.
Great. Yeah. Again, all the information is there. Training is there. But you had mentioned, there's a couple of companies that you can go and get those certifications from and just make it a little, more official, I guess, is a better way to put it. You know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, getting down to it and having that certificate. Obviously, you know, you've had the training towards it and hopefully it doesn't create any damage with it.
Yeah,
because obviously...
Yeah, I see. Hopefully, this year we'll have less damage than the year before. So
yeah, we can hope with that. So
yeah, the potential for damage is the type of the nature of the chemical itself. The herbicide is, it may be put on correctly, but then there are variables that occur, and the material itself is volatile. That means it turns to a gas.
Yeah,
and then that gas, under certain conditions, can drift off-site and do off-site damage very easily. And this is a problem. This potential for damage, and we're trying. The purpose is to reduce or minimize the risk associated with this management tool for wheats in soybean production.
And I can imagine a lot of these regulations and things like that would be found with the Kansas Department of Agriculture, if like a website or something like that.
Yeah, you can go to the KDA website. Theirs is a little bit dated, honestly. Okay. And so better regulations can be found on basically the company websites, BASF and Monsanto and DuPont. So.
Great stuff with that. And real quick, before we get into another segment here, kind of with this inclement weather that we've all been experiencing here,
right.
It's a big shout out as well. Keith Martin, who had, I believe, stepped into retirement.
Yeah.
Congratulations for Keith with that. We haven't had any news coming out of it, but now we finally do. I believe you guys have made a new hire over there.
Yeah, we got a lady that grew up in the Montgomery County area. Her name's Wendy Powell. Wendy Powell will start work here in the Wildcat District on March 11th. I guess that's official. We got official notification of this. So, and of course, her maiden name was Klubine. Some folks may recognize that.
But great. And what was it again that Keith was? He did a lot of pasture and things like that.
Yeah, he was the livestock.
There we go. Livestock.
Worked with livestock, and
will she be doing similar to that?
Yes.
Or, okay.
She's hired specifically for that, and she has a master's degree in livestock production, so that should have a. And she's got some experience because she's working with the Oklahoma Extension right now.
Great stuff. Again, I know we don't get all agents over here, but will Wendy be someone joining us here on KGGF?
She doesn't get away with that.
She doesn't get away with that. No.
Yeah. She'll be here.
Good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff. So I'm excited to meet her and as well some new faces within the Extension offices. So exciting news there, but... Well, Jacob, we can probably go ahead and get right into it. It is freezing outside say the least.
We're getting into what I call the roller coaster weather. When we have a spell of mild, sunny weather. You can go outside and work outside and have all sorts of outdoor activities, and all of a sudden it gets really cold. But with this type of weather, there's issues with certain plants, woody plants that have thin bark and are susceptible to what we call sun scald injury, or another name for it is southwest disease, southwest injury. It always occurs in the southwest side, typically occurs in the southwest, not always, but typically on the southwest side of sensitive trees like my cherry tree, for example. But this, I've replaced it. So
I was going to say, sounds like this is a past experience. Right?
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of this, especially on red maples. Red maples are extremely susceptible. Young red maples and silver maple as well, and some other fruit trees, apple trees, peach trees in particular, very susceptible to sun scald injury. And occurs as a result of having these mild spells of warm, sunny weather. And then cold snap hits. I mean, cold snap brings temperatures down, freezing down into the teens, maybe even down in single digits. And what that does, the warm spells, bright, sunny days, we get a warming effect. And the warming effect is greatest in the afternoon when the daytime temperatures have warmed up and we get that bright sunlight shining on the bark of the trees, and they get a nice warming effect. And after a few days of that bark starts to say, okay, time to, spring's coming, here we go. And then that cold snap hits, and that bark there on that southwest side of the tree is getting tender. And that sudden change in temperature causes a little tissue damage. And if it's bad enough, it'll actually kill the tissue. A lot of times, though, what I see is that tissue is damaged, and it makes an ideal site for infestation of bark-boring beetles, or actually bark-infesting beetles. The larva is in particular, a flat-headed borer. And the reason it's called flat-headed, because if you look at it, at the larva phase, it has kind of a flattened head right behind the head. It kind of almost looks like a little cobra ready to strike. But they'll tunnel in underneath that bark that's been damaged, because it's ideal habitat for them to develop. And, of course, the adult beetles, they know that this is not an ideal place to deposit the eggs. So we get a double effect. We get the injured bark, and then we get the further damage from the bark tunneling insect, and then we get damage on the southwest side of the tree. This can be prevented by just simply keeping the sunlight off of the southwest side of the trunk of the tree in particular. We might get some damage in the upper limbs as well, especially in the crotch areas, and this is a particular problem in peach trees where that crotch gets damaged, and then we get an infection called perennial canker, and then it takes out the peach tree after a few years and kills the tree. So just a little bit of a cardboard tube around the trunk of the tree during wintertime when the leaves come off in the fall, put a tube around the trunk of the tree, or maybe a paper wrap. There's a trunk wrap paper that we put on. We can put on sometimes plastic tubes around the tree, but we're going to be very careful about certain ones of these that, if left on continually, can actually strangle the tree and kill the tree in that manner. So we want to make sure that we take some of this material off during the summer months and allow for expansion of the trunk. But after a few years, when that bark gets thick enough on those trees, the sun scald injury is less likely to occur, but still can occur. I've seen it occur on even older trees. And in one situation, I saw like a 40-year-old tree that suddenly have sun scald injury on it, because the tree was never exposed to the sunlight until a tree next to it was cut down. Huh. And then the injury happened. And so it can occur. So we can prevent it with a little bit of protection on those trees.
Yeah, a little strategic placement sometimes as well, whether it's a structure or other, you know, shrubs, something like that, to provide natural shade, or like you had mentioned, just a little cover to protect the southwest side of the tree with that. So again, you know, we can't control the weather, but at the same time, we can sometimes strategically place to keep the plants healthier with
that's
that.
Right.
So again, that's Jacob Weber and James Coover here with us on this Wednesday morning. A couple of agents with the K-State Extension Office. Well, gentlemen, I guess we'll just check in with K-State next week.
Very good.
Sounds good. Thank
you. This is the Mighty 690 KGGF.